Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you want. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Abraham Martyr, and my job description. Composer, writer, producer. I think that about covers it.
Abe, welcome to the program. It's a delight to have you on. I've seen Sound of Metal 3 times, twice at home and once in the cinema, and I was struck by what a different experience it was in the cinema. Before we go back and talk about the film and your work on it, do you want to say something about why it's important to see a film like Sound of Metal in a cinema or a theater rather than at home?
Well, yeah, this film in particular is one that we spend so many years dreaming of this sound experience. And me and Darius are just cinema lovers. And that's just the way we'd most like to see a film. So every second of this film as an audio experience, you know, was mixed to be experienced in a theater. And the amazing thing is that when all that happened in this world happened, I think we felt like the headphone experience that so many people were getting at home ended up working, which was a beautiful thing, because it created this kind of super intimacy. But the theater experience, to experience this film with people and to have that connection, this film is so much about connection. And connecting beyond the internal of yourself and coming out of yourself. And so to experience that with people in a theater and have this visceral sound experience that we dreamed of is the best way we could imagine for people to view it.
Sounds weird.
The thing that I had heard your director say was that because of the way that the film is constructed and because of the way the captioning is constructed, it was important that the film could be seen by hearing and deaf audiences simultaneously in the same space, and they would notice that they reacted differently to different parts of the film. And I've heard reports from a couple of people who've said that they have seen the film with deaf audiences who were getting jokes and references and things that none of the hearing audience are picking up on. And I just think that sounds like a wonderfully inclusive experience.
It's the best. It's the best. We talked about it a lot. And, you know, that was maybe the biggest disappointment was, you know, that the captions aren't burnt into the streaming version online. And I was thinking they would be. So for that cinema experience is all the more important just for that reason alone. And yeah, that's magic. I had the same thing in some screenings. I had one screening with almost only deaf people, and it was amazing to see what was coming through in a different way.
So tell us about your involvement in the film. Obviously the film began life as a kind of as a dramatized documentary focusing on a real life duo. Tell me how you became involved and what your earliest role was in the film.
Well, Darius Martyr, the director, is my brother, and we've been talking about film together for as long as I've been alive. He's 10 years older than me. So he was kind of like a little bit of a film professor for me, brought me into film and showed me all the classics. And but anyway, we've been talking about film for years, and I've always been a sort of a songwriter first and a musician, and never had dreams of being a screenwriter. But something happened where I had sort of a freak back injury, and I had lost all my work, my normal kind of get me through being a musician work. Working kind of manual labor jobs, and I was completely laid out. I had no money. I was just screwed. And Darius was working on this script, and he kind of said at some point, you know, I have this tight deadline. I have to get the script off for this kind of festival. Do you want to take a trip with me, and you can kind of work on music, and we can just talk? And because I was, you know, I was not in a good way. And so we took a trip, and we ended up just talking and talking about this script. And then I just became intoxicated, and he kind of invited me in. And then, wow, I don't know, 10 years later, something like that, it never stopped.
Did he bring you in because you were a musician and what he needed was a musician's ear to the script?
I think no. We both just believe so much in simple, genuine, kind of authentic stories, storytelling. And I think he knows that through my songwriting, I'm a storyteller too. Even though I never had dreams of kind of, again, being a screenwriter. So the conversations between us and film have always been really fun and natural, and we have very similar tastes. So I think it was more just a coincidence that we came together at that moment, and then the conversations were just natural. So it was kind of like, okay, this makes sense. And that was a joy.
And what about the early footage that was shot when he was using, I forget the name of the two-piece that he was originally working with when he was originally thinking of this as a project?
That footage is beautiful. You know, that was started by Darius's good friend, and they wrote Place Beyond the Pines together, and Derek C. in France. So Derek started that film and had this initial inspiration. And that footage is just... it's dirty, you know, beautiful film. I can't remember exactly what it is, if it's 15, but it's just super grainy and beautiful and dirty and rough and really intoxicating. And that band is just, you know, they're said to be one of the loudest bands ever. The lead singer, her hair, you know, they have a stack of, I don't know, 20 amps behind her, and her hair blows from the noise. You know, it's like the kind of joke of metal and rock, your hair blows, but her hair actually blows. And she screams bloody murder. They're very, very hardcore. But Derek really experienced some hearing loss when he was a drummer himself. So he got inspired by that. And then Darius got hooked on this footage and started editing it at some point. And then there was sort of a baton pass. And then me and Darius really took it from being this band, based around this band, and then took it in a whole new direction.
So because this is, it's a complicated evolution story. I mean, even when I was writing my review some months ago, I remember going back and reading reviews and finding how far back the story went, the Derek C. in France original. Is there, when you see the film now, does it owe any substantial debt to that original project, or is it a completely different beast?
Oh, completely. Owes a lot. I mean, I love Derek as a filmmaker, and there's no question. I mean, the seeds of this film, drummer losing his hearing, you can't escape that. That's just a basis that's so undeniable for what this film is. And that band is so authentic. And the footage was so authentic and so captivating that was always really inspiring to Darius and I. And I think we knew that we had a lot of how we were going to turn that into a story was took a while. But those seeds like were inspiring throughout the whole process. And without those, I mean, I don't know. You're making a different movie.
So the story is of a musician who loses his hearing, which is inspired by two real life musicians for which there was documentary footage shot that was going to be, involved in a drama. And you come on both as a writer and a musician. And I talked to Riz and about the character, and he said it is really important that I play the drums. I can't be acting playing the drums. I actually have to be able to play the drums. So that seems to me, therefore, that the whole project is built upwards like a song. That's the root of it. It's coming out of a musical background. Do you want to just maybe expand on that a little bit? Because that feels to me like the root of the film.
Yeah. I mean, just the very basis of this one song and this one composition that took a lot of twists and turns. But I started working on that years ago. And Darius and I started talking about it and talking with musicians about it years ago. And it was always this really intense conversation of like, you know, the actors are going to play this. There's no faking. It's going to be a one shot. And, you know, some things changed a little, but still no faking at all. And one shot. And it's imperative that this first scene is, you know, intoxicating, and you believe in these guys' relationship more than anything, but their relationship is communicated through their music, and that's their bond together. So this music has to be undeniably them. And that's essential. And there's no, you know, two ifs, ands or buts about it. That's what's happening. So that's easy to say, but that took many, many years and lots of failure. And oh my God, there could be a whole movie just about that song and how long that took, because that song took so many different forms, had different people involved. I worked with this amazing drummer, Harry Cantwell, who's a black metal drummer. And then at some point, we always wanted Pharmacon involved. Margaret from this band Pharmacon. She's this brilliant noise musician. I don't know if you're aware of her.
I'm not.
She's incredible. But she you know, bangs on metal, and she has contact mics on like pieces of steel in the floor, and she screams into them, and they makes these kind of analog loops out of her screams and like vomiting and, you know, just the most wild, dirty, but gorgeous and really genius like compositions. So we always wanted her involved, and we wanted her to have an influence on the actress. And so we were able to pull her in right at the end. We already had a composition, and then she came in and did her own tweak on it. And then really taught Olivia in a very short amount of time how to scream and loop live on stage with the guitar, which is a really hard thing to do. I mean, I don't know that I could have done what Olivia did with her looping live on stage, even though I'm a musician. It was like she was impeccable. Yeah.
Hearing those stories reminds me of the stories of what Mercedes McCambridge went through to do the demon voice on The Exorcist.
Oh, wow.
And she talks about like literally turning herself inside out to produce the sound that you hear as the voice of Reagan. And she says it was the most intense acting she ever did, and all you're getting is the voice. But what a voice it is.
Wow. Incredible.
Do you have loads and loads of early demo versions of the songs? Is there an evolution of that stuff? I imagine that you...
Okay. Yeah.
Do you go back and listen to them?
I've listened to them a bit.
How are they?
You know, I can kind of... It depends on the day, but I haven't listened that much. But when I have, I can kind of respect like the different... Some parts I'm like, oh man, I really loved that. That was cool. I wish that could have stuck in there. And then other stuff, I'm like, oh God, thank God. Thank God I got past that moment.
In terms of, okay, so you now have that sort of that route for the story and for the character. What are then the key beats of what happens afterwards in terms of your input? Because again, it's this strange thing that it is a film about music that is also about the absence of hearing and the way in which people hear things differently. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I mean this with the greatest respect, if it had gone wrong, I think it would have, it's the kind of film that would have failed spectacularly. I think it's brilliant.
Oh yeah.
But I think it's a very, very thin line between getting it right and getting it wrong. And I wonder whether that worried you at all.
Oh my God. Yeah. Cause I cared way too much about this film for a long time. And at the same time, I'm not the director of the film. The director is my brother. So it's nice that I can shout in his ear a lot, but at the same time, we had the same worries though. You know, we were on the same page. It was always, how the hell are we going to pull off? How is this actor going to be this playing the drums and then losing his hearing as well and fluent in sign? But more than that, you know, this sound experience and how you portray that. And then this whole issue of score and music, you know, it's not really a music film. This is a sound experience and a simple story. And you can't get in the way of the point of the film, this intimacy, and this being stuck in yourself and what that is to be stuck in your existence and the internal. And we wanted that to be a really unique experience. And so as a musician, that was very tricky. You know, I love big audacious scores, and I was fighting for a long time not to have a score for the film. And we had a big score. We had a, you know, a very different score at one point, that we, right before going off to some festival, we completely removed the score completely and rewrote it in like 5 days. And then after that worked on it for a long period of time, but it became about working with the sound design and working.
What kind of score was it that you had? I can't imagine the film with a different, I mean, you said it's like a large, you know, an orchestral score or a melodic score. What kind of score was it that you had and then ditched?
We tried a lot of things. I started off by making these big kind of feedbacking pieces and, you know, working a lot with, you know, electronic bows, with e-bows and baritone guitars and doing these kind of big vibrational feedbacking pieces. And then we ended up taking some of the feedback from the concert and the film and transposing it and kind of bringing that in as score and adding some like low elements to it. But it became way too bold. You know, it was kind of showing itself. So you were having these moments where you're seeing Ruben, you know, that would be sort of traditional scoring moments. And this film is so gentle, you know, these moments that you just have to be with a person and not be distracted and not be told to feel. And the score was blowing. It was blowing the film. So just like you're saying, I mean, I think it was destroying the film. So we took it all out.
And what are the key elements of what you ended up using? What were the key generational elements that produced the sounds that we hear?
Well, one that was always really inspiring to me was the Crystal Bechet. And that's an incredibly unique instrument that...
Can you describe what it is and how it works?
Yeah. It's these pieces of... it's like a piano, but the keys are crystal glass... and they're attached to these pieces of steel, and that those are also attached to these big aluminum cones. They're really beautiful instruments, but people yeah. wet their fingers to play it. And Nicola Becker, who I co-compose a score with and who's the sound designer, he plays this instrument a lot. And so he made these big, long strands of this, you know, it always reminded me of sort of the inner ear. It's this super vibrational, it can be angelic and have this crazy high end that's almost like tinnitus-like. Then it can be crazy vibrational and guttural. So he would make these big, long strands of just a note And I would take all these pieces and I started kind of morphing them into compositions and then adding, I play a lot of resophonic guitar. So like the steel guitar, and I was using an Ebow as well. And then doing the same thing, transposing those strands with his, and then adding all sorts of crazy instruments. Like, Nicola also had like a drum, like a big bass drum that was hanging on a spring, and all sorts of wacky. I did a lot with, you know, like wind sounds and, breath and, all sorts of kind of sounds of the body. And then just really working a lot with the sound design. So you never really know exactly if it's an instrument or if it's sound design. But what was most important is that you start very internal. And then at a certain point when he's in the deaf community, that score starts to come out of the body a bit and merge with the natural elements and the wind and to kind of show that he's coming out of himself.
You say Ebow, by which I presume you mean something like a gizmo. Can you just explain what that is again, if a listener doesn't know what an Ebow is?
Yeah, it's an electronic bow, and it has sort of a, I won't be able to describe it correctly, but it's this thing.
Yeah. It's like a rotating wheel that bows the string continuously.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can make a guitar string kind of sound, almost like a violin. And when you use these instruments that have a lot of bass, it can create quite a menacing sound. I'm infatuated with them, and so is Nicola. So he uses them on the piano and on the crystal bachet, and I use them on all sorts of things too.
I remember struggling for ages to get hold of a copy of Consequences by Godley and Cream, which I think was one of the first albums that, because they, you know, they'd worked on the development of the gizmo. Mm. And the whole album was basically just the triple album advert for look what you can do when you can bow strings.
I'm in. That's the best. I think that's one of the best inventions ever.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
So when you have all those sounds then put together, what's interesting is you say, you know, you had this sort of larger wall of sound and that then came away. As it came away and you started replacing with what sounds like a sparser sound, and you're talking about working very closely with the sound design. Mm-hmm. Do you get to a point where music and sound design just become part of the same thing, or are they always completely separate entities?
No, I think they were very much part of the same thing. And that's what took a while to get to. There was one scene in particular. Oh my God. I think it's the drive north. After Ruben loses his hearing and they're driving to the deaf community, there's this sort of montage, and the sound design, and it's really brilliant, and it's also super, you know, it's all in deaf perspective. So it's really low and it's different frequencies of low. But that was a real struggle, and that took a long time to figure out how to merge that score and not get in the way. But then it became about, you know, listening for when is the wind coming in, and when the wind's coming in, then you can play with bringing in some higher elements. And but you're really sticking to keeping the audience in this perspective.
Were there other scores that you looked to in terms of inspiration? Were there other film musicians that you looked back to draw inspiration from, or did it largely come from what you've been doing anyway, working as a musician?
I think there was people that I was, you know, that I've always been really inspired by and was inspired by. And some of those things I tried and made compositions that ended up being too kind of audacious for the film. So, you know, there's people I love, you know, that obvious kind of Johnny Greenwoods and Mika Levy and, you know, these kind of people. And some of the sounds, you know, there's some things that, you know, even with the Ebo, you know, Johnny Greenwood's always been really inspiring to me. So some of those high elements that I played with the Ebo, I'm sure somehow inspired through him. But really, when it comes down to it, it's about this unique language that we worked on for so long with the film, and sticking to something that, you know, is maybe less impressive in a way musically, but when you really sit with it, you know, we have this score out, and I'm really proud of it, because as it stands alone, it's you know, an experience unlike most. You're really meant to feel it in your body, and it's a very meditative experience. So yeah.
How does it sound to you listening to it away from the film? I mean, you mentioned Mika Levy. I was listening to Mika Levy's Monos score just recently, and you know, which has huge amounts of space in it, and a lot of it almost sounds like kind of submarine sonar.
Yeah,
and I love the sound of that. I'm a big fan of ambient soundtrack, going right back to Louis and B.B. Baron and Forbidden Planet. And how does it sound to you hearing that score away from the film, hearing it in isolation?
Well, what I really worked on with the score was developing some of the emotionality, and, you know, you're taken through the same story, but you're almost staying in scenes, viewing scenes from a slightly different angle. And there's more emotionality, I think, in the score on the soundtrack, a lot more than there is in the film. I really enjoyed playing with that and really living into Ruben's world further. And you know, it's some of the things that you wouldn't have given way to in the film. Some of the high elements, melodically, I really enjoyed working, on myself, and then also including Evelyn Glennie, and some of her amazing sounds, which really helped bring a whole new presence as well. I think it's a completely different, it recalls the sonics of the film, but I think it's a completely new experience. And that's what I was really most hoping for.
Can you pick a couple of cues that particularly are favorites of yours, and tell us something about why you like them?
I really love metal. That's something that there was no cochlear implant based score in the film. And that's something I always wanted to do. But it was again, one of those things where you didn't need extra. But that piece, was a pleasure to work on, and basically made all this music and then morphed it. I worked with, Carolina Santana, who was also working in the sound team, and she morphed all these pieces of Ebo into cochlear implant strands of implant. And by the end of the piece, you know, you're on this Paris street walking with Ruben is the idea, and as the piece goes along, the cochlear implant effect begins to close in on the music and push it all together. So it's a kind of I was hoping for it to be kind of brutal but beautiful. And it's definitely a piece that you don't get in the film that's meant to be a sort of an extra.
You
What was the most difficult sound to achieve, Abe? What was the thing that gave you the most pause?
I mean, the most difficult thing overall is to make an album that's mostly in deaf perspective. It's an incredibly challenging thing. And if you listen on the wrong system, you can be like, is there music on? What's happening? So that was really tough at certain points to be working and kind of like, oh my God, I could just throw some violin in here and call it a day, you know, just to do something that's a bit easier. It's not an easy album. So that was the most difficult thing. It was just a joy to make something that felt really in keeping with the film and that felt kind of really fresh to me, but not easy.
Okay, tell me some of your favorite soundtrack albums.
Oh, favorite soundtrack albums. Oh, man. I always loved Sling Blade, Daniel Lanois on Sling Blade. I'm a big Daniel Lanois fan. You know, again, Johnny Greenwood, whether it's The Master, Phantom Thread.
Phantom Thread's interesting because it's kind of Richard Adensel, which is kind of not what you'd expect from Johnny Greenwood, but it's so, I introduced a live performance of it with Johnny and,
oh, wow.
And watching the film play, you know, performed with a live orchestra is breathtaking, not least because there's so much music mm-hmm. in it. I mean, it's quite remarkable how much, just the sheer length of music that's in that film. But I know he talked about, you know, looking towards Richard Adensel, which of course, because of the stuff that he'd done before, which was a lot more kind of at the experimental edge, I thought there was something really gorgeous about his embracing of that. I love that score. I think that score's wonderful.
I completely agree. He took this classic, you know, when I first was watching the film, I was like, wow, this is Johnny Greenwood. And was feeling a bit judgy. I was like, what is this? You know? And then as I came back to it and as the film progressed, I was like, oh, this is gorgeous. This is just what you'd want, you know, this classic score from Johnny Greenwood. So yeah, I think that's gorgeous as well.
Mm. And you mentioned the Mika Levy scores. You're a big fan of hers, I take it.
Yeah, I love her sounds. And, you know, Under the Skin is just a kind of, that almost feels like she made a score and then told the filmmaker to make a film. You know, it's just this, like, no disrespect, amazing filmmaker, and you love the film, but it's just such a bold score, and I love how big and open it is, but all, you know, it's just it's pretty unique.
I think the main love theme from that score is, I think it's called Love, which is really remarkable. I do a soundtrack music show on the radio, and we played that. It was a lunchtime. We got people writing in saying, really, not now, like not in the middle of the right. day. It's yeah. just was freaking people out yeah. around the country. But I love the sounds on that score because they are genuinely otherworldly mm-hmm. but also really kind of personal, and they feel very emotional. And I think that's the thing that you're talking about, in that you're creating a soundscape, but it has, there's the level of emotion that you can have in it, whether it's in the film or whether it's in the standalone score, that's the thing that you're having to balance
yeah.
correctly, is how much the score leads you emotionally. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was always a dance with the emotionality is always first, even if it's not like, over the top, it's not about weeping your eyes out, but, always following the emotionality and the story and the inner and having, leaving room for space, especially in this film. And the credit song, I wrote the credit song, Green, in the film. And that was a whole another piece that was all about, you know, leaving space and staying with this, this sound language of deaf perspective. And, you know, at all, so many moments you're like, oh, could I just put in this guitar and do this? And no, you have to stay with the language.
What are you most proud of about the film, since it's been so well received, and, you know, both by critics and audiences, and of course, at award ceremonies? What are you most proud of about it?
I think I'm most proud. I'm most proud that the reaction has come through in this time in which so many people have been so alone and feeling, I think, feeling really lost with either losing their jobs or being sick or knowing people are sick and really have to redefine their lives and question their lives completely. And I've had so many reactions from people who I think viewed it in this crazy, weird moment, hard moment, and felt, I got the sense there was some feeling of healing, and some feeling of, feeling an understanding, of just the magical, hard nature of life. And I think that's all me and Darius who always wanted to communicate, that, just that. And so it's so, so strange that this film would come along in this time, and but such a blessing that people can have that reaction when they do.
How was lockdown for you? Because obviously the film was finished by 2019, wasn't it? So it all, you know, all done and dusted long before this happened. How have you found lockdown?
Incredibly hard. I mean, me and my family, we totally uprooted and moved, and you know, we're staying at people's places, and I was working on the score in that time, kind of in basements and moving around and trying to juggle parenting and working and just keeping some kind of sanity somehow with all these unknowns. So like so many people, I think it was incredibly hard. And some of the film, the response to the film was really helpful once the film came out, because it created this energy, this movement and connection to other people, which is so hard to come by.
I'm talking to you and I'm looking at you on Zoom, and I can see behind you there are two guitars, and it looks like there's a strap to one side. I can only see the neck. Is that a strap?
That is a Fender baritone, kind of like a sort of bass guitar. It's like a rare kind of baritone Fender.
Can you show it to me? Because I'm really intrigued by that.
Yeah, I think it was like
It's six strings?
It's six strings. You can create like a super, a very bassy string here. But you can create really, I think like The Cure used that. Rick Danko from the band used that. And it's like, just creates the most amazing. If you just play like a D chord, it just sounds like huge, full D chord.
And the body's shaped like a Jazz or a Jaguar or something like that, with that kind of angular, slightly delta
shape. Yeah, it's a Jaguar. Yeah.
Jaguar, okay, fine. And what's the other one to the right, which I can't make out at all?
Oh, that's one I used a bunch for the score.
It's a Dobro, yeah. Okay. Beautiful. Yeah. I love to see a man surrounded by guitars. I think it shows a very healthy mind. I only have a double bass, and it's just something you can
That's the best. You win. You won.
Yeah, well, you see this, you know, it's like what you call somebody who hangs around with musicians, a bassist, and that's that's my role in all of this. Listen, it's been lovely speaking to you. Congratulations on the film. Congratulations on the score. What are you doing now? What are you up to next?
I'm working on a solo album right now, just kind of in the vein of my song Green from the film. It's all, you know, lyrical songs. So that's kind of my first love, and that's been working on a bunch of these songs for a while. So
when will we hear that?
Hopefully very soon. I think I'll release kind of single at a time, I think. So hopefully I'll have one out very soon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you come to the UK with it, then please come and see us in person when all this is hopefully behind us.
Oh, I'd love to.
And bring the baritone guitar, because I'd love to see that in the flesh. That looks something.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Thanks ever so much. Yeah. Good to speak to you. Stay well.
You too. Bye.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.